might not be heard. And among these, the priests were as rude as any, as may be seen in the book of the fighting priests, wherein a list is given of some priests that had actually beaten and abused friends. Many friends were brought prisoners to London to be tried before the committee, where Henry Vane, being chairman, would not suffer friends to come in, except they would put off their hats. Footnote 151. From being Cromwell's most intimate friend, Sir Harry Vane had become his most fearless opposer and an advocate of extreme republicanism. After the downfall of Richard Cromwell, Vane had a brief return to influence and power. In September 1659, he was made president of the council and was in this position the executive head of the nation in civil affairs. This episode must, therefore, be dated in the autumn of 1659. Reader's note, the text calls him Henry Vane. In the footnote, it's Harry Vane. But at last the Lord's power came over him, so that, through the mediation of others, they were admitted. Many of us having been imprisoned upon contempts, as they called them, for not putting off our hats. It was not a likely thing that friends who had suffered so long for it from others should put off their hats to him. But the Lord's power came over all and wrought so that several were set at liberty by them. I wrote to Oliver several times and let him know that while he was persecuting God's people, they whom he accounted his enemies were preparing to come upon him. When some forward spirits that came amongst us would have bought Somerset House, that we might have meetings in it, I forbade them to do so, for I then foresaw the king's coming in again. Besides, there came a woman to me in the Strand who had a prophecy concerning King Charles coming in 3 years before he came, and she told me she must go to him to declare it. I advised her to wait upon the Lord and keep it to herself, for if it should be known that she went on such a message, they would look upon it to be treason. But she said she must go and tell him that he should be brought into England again. I saw her prophecy was true, and that a great stroke must come upon them in power, for they that had then got possession were so exceeding high, and such great persecution was acted by them, who called themselves saints, that they would take from friends their copyhold lands, because they could not swear in their courts. Sometimes when we laid these sufferings before Oliver Cromwell, he would not believe it. Therefore Thomas Aldham and Anthony Pearson were moved to go through all the jails in England and to get copies of friends' commitments under the jailer's hands, that they might lay the weight of their sufferings upon Oliver Cromwell. And when he would not give order for the releasing of them, Thomas Aldham was moved to take his cap from off his head, and to rend it in pieces before him, and to say unto him, "So shall thy government be rent from thee and thy house." Another friend, also a woman, was moved to go to the Parliament that was envious against friends, with a pitcher in her hand, which she broke into pieces before them, and told them that so should they be broken to pieces, which came to pass shortly after. In my great suffering and travail of spirit for the nation, being grievously burdened with their hypocrisy, treachery, and falsehood, I saw God would bring that over them which they had been above, and that all must be brought down to that which convinced them, before they could get over that bad spirit within and without. For it is the pure, invisible spirit that doth and only can work down all deceit in people. Now was there a great pother made about the image or effigy of Oliver Cromwell lying in state, men standing and sounding with trumpets over his image after he was dead. At this my spirit was greatly grieved, and the Lord, I found, was highly offended. About this time great stirs were in the nation, the minds of people being unsettled, much plotting and contriving there was by the several factions to carry on their several interests, and a great care being upon me, lest any young or ignorant people that might sometimes come amongst us should be drawn into that snare, I was moved to give forth an epistle as a warning unto all such. Footnote 152. This epistle begins, "All friends everywhere keep out of plots and bustling and the arm of flesh." A little later he writes again, "Stand in the fear and dread of the Lord God, his power, life, light, seed, and wisdom, by which ye may take away the occasion of wars, and so know a kingdom which hath no end, and fight for that with spiritual weapons, which takes away the occasion of the carnal, and there gather men to war, as many as ye can, and set up as many as ye can with these weapons." G.F. Chapter 13, In the First Year of King Charles, 1660. I entered Bristol on the seventh day of the week. Footnote 153. After leaving London, he had traveled extensively through eastern and southern counties, revisiting Cornwall, where he had had such a long experience in Launceston Jail in 1656. The day before, the soldiers came with their muskets into the meeting and were exceedingly rude, beating and striking friends with them, and drove them out of the orchard in a great rage, threatening what they would do if friends came there again. For the mayor and the commander of the soldiers had, it seems, combined together to make a disturbance amongst friends. When friends told me what a rage there was in the town, how they were threatened by the mayor and soldiers, and how unruly the soldiers had been the day before, I sent for several friends, as George Bishop, Thomas Gouldney, Thomas Speed, and Edward Pyott, and desired them to go to the mayor and aldermen, and request them, seeing he and they had broken up our meetings, to let friends have the town hall to meet in. For the use of it, friends would give them £20 a year, to be distributed amongst the poor, and when the mayor and aldermen had business to do in it, friends would not meet in it, but only on first days. These friends were astonished at this, and said the mayor and aldermen would think that they were mad. I said nay, for this would be a considerable benefit to the poor, and it was upon me from the Lord to bid them go. At last they consented and went, though in the cross, to their own wills. When they had laid the thing before the mayor, he said, "For my part, I could consent to it, but I am but one." And he told friends of another great hall they might have, but that they did not accept, it being inconvenient. So friends came away, leaving the mayor in a very loving frame toward them, for they felt the Lord's power had come over him. When they came back, I spoke to them to go also to the colonel that commanded the soldiers, and lay before him the rude conduct of his soldiers, how they came armed against innocent people, who were waiting upon and worshiping the Lord, but they were backward to go to him. Next morning, being first day, we went to the meeting in the orchard, where the soldiers had lately been so rude. After I had declared the truth, some time in the meeting, there came in many rude soldiers and people, some with drawn swords. The innkeepers had made some of them drunk, and one had bound himself with an oath to cut down and kill the man that spoke. He came pressing in through all the crowd of people to within 2 yards of me, and stopped by those four friends before mentioned, who should have gone to the colonel as I would have had them, and began jangling with them. Suddenly I saw his sword was put up and gone, for the Lord's power came over all and chained him with the rest. We had a blessed meeting, and the Lord's everlasting power and presence were felt amongst us. On the day following, the four friends went and spoke with the colonel, and he sent for the soldiers, and cut and slashed some of them before the friends' faces. When I heard of this, I blamed the friends for letting him do so, and also that they did not go on the seventh day, as I would have had them, which might have prevented this cutting of the soldiers and the trouble they gave at our meeting. But thus the Lord's power came over all those persecuting bloody minds, and the meeting there was held in peace for a good while after, without disturbance. I had then also a general meeting at Edward Pyatt's near Bristol, at which it was judged there were several thousands of people, for besides friends from many parts thereabouts, some of the Baptists and Independents with their teachers came to it, and many of the sober people of Bristol, insomuch that the people who stayed behind said the city looked naked, so many were gone out of it to this meeting. Footnote 154. These great meetings were at this period held out of doors, in fields or orchards, or on some high hill. It was very quiet, and many glorious truths were open to the people. As we had much work with priests and professors who pleaded for imperfection, I was open to declare and manifest to them that Adam and Eve were perfect before they fell. And all that God made, he saw, was good, and he blessed it. But the imperfection came in by the fall, through man's and woman's hearkening to the devil who was out of truth. And though the law made nothing perfect, yet it made way for the bringing in of the better hope, which is hope in Christ, who destroys the devil and his works, which made man and woman imperfect. Christ saith to his disciples, Be ye perfect, even as your heavenly Father is perfect. And he, who himself was perfect, comes to make man and woman perfect again, and brings them again to the state in which God made them. So he is the maker up of the breach, and the peace betwixt God and man. That this might the better be understood by the lowest capacities, I used a comparison of two old people who had their house broken down by an enemy, so that they with all their children were liable to all storms and tempests. And there came to them some that pretended to be workmen, and offered to build up their house again, if they would give them so much a year. But when they had got the money, they left the house as they found it. After this manner came a second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, each with his several pretense to build up the old house, and each got the people's money, and then cried that they could not rear up the house. The breach could not be made up, for there is no perfection here. They tell the old people that the house can never be perfectly built up again in this life, though they have taken the people's money for doing it. So all the sect masters in Christendom, so-called, have pretended to build up Adam and Eve's fallen house, and when they have got the people's money, they tell them the work cannot be perfectly done here, so their house lies as it did. But I told the people Christ was come to do it freely, who by one offering hath perfected forever all them that are sanctified, and renews them up into the image of God, which man and woman were in before they fell, and makes man's and woman's house as perfect again as God made them at the first. And this Christ, the heavenly man, doth freely. Therefore all are to look unto him, and all that have received him are to walk in him, the life, the substance, the first and the last, the rock of ages, the foundation of many generations. About this time the soldiers under General Monk's command were rude and troublesome at friends' meetings in many places, whereof complaint being made to him, he gave forth the following order, which somewhat restrained them. St. James, the 9th of March, 1659. I do require all officers and soldiers to forbear to disturb the peaceable meetings of the Quakers, they doing nothing prejudicial to the Parliament or Commonwealth of England. Signed, George Monk. We passed then to Tewkesbury and so to Worcester, visiting friends in their meetings as we went. And in all my time I never saw such drunkenness as in the towns, for they had been choosing Parliament men. At Worcester the Lord's truth was set over all. People were finally settled therein, and friends praised the Lord. Nay, I saw the very earth rejoice. Yet great fears and troubles were in many people, and a looking for the king's coming in, and all things being altered. They would ask me what I thought of times and things. I told them the Lord's power was over all, and his light shone over all. That fear would take hold only on the hypocrites, such as had not been faithful to God, and on our persecutors. In my travail and sufferings at Reading, when people were at a stand and could not tell what might come in and who might rule, I told them the Lord's power was over all, for I had traveled through in it, and his day shined, whosoever should come in, and whether the king came in or not, all would be well to them that loved the Lord and were faithful to him. Therefore I bade all friends fear none but the Lord and keep in his power. From Worcester I visited friends in their meetings till I came to Badgley, and thence I went to Drayton, to Leicestershire, to visit my relations. While there, one Burton, a justice, hearing I had a good horse, sent a warrant to search for me and my horse, but I was gone before they came, and so he missed of his wicked end. I passed on to Twycross, Swannington, and Derby, where I visited friends, and found amongst them my old jailer, who had formerly kept me in the house of correction there, now convinced of the truth, which I then suffered under him for. Passing into Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire, I came to Cinderhill Green, visiting friends through all those parts in their meetings, and so on to Valby in Yorkshire, where our yearly meeting at that time was held in a great orchard of John Killam's, where it was supposed some thousands of people and friends were gathered together. In the morning I heard that a troop of horse was sent from York to break up our meetings, and that the militia newly raised was to join them. I went into the meeting and stood up on a great stool, and after I had spoken some time, two trumpeters came up, sounding their trumpets near me, and the captain of the troop cried, "Divide to the right and left and make way." Then they rode up to me. I was declaring the everlasting truth and word of life in the mighty power of the Lord. The captain bade me come down, for he was come to disperse our meeting. After some time I told him they all knew we were a peaceable people, and used to have such great meetings. But if he apprehended that we met in a hostile way, I desired him to make search among us, and if he found either sword or pistol about any there, let such suffer. He told me he must see us dispersed, for he came all night on purpose to disperse us. I asked him what honor it would be to him to ride with swords and pistols amongst so many unarmed men and women as there were. If he would be still and quiet, our meeting probably might not continue above 2 or 3 hours, and when it was done, as we came peaceably together, we should part, for he might perceive the meeting was so large that all the country thereabouts could not entertain them, but that they intended to depart towards their homes at night. He said he could not stay to see the meeting ended, but must disperse them before he went. I desired him then, if he himself could not stay, that he would let a dozen of his soldiers stay, and see the order and peaceableness of our meeting. He said he would permit us an hour's time, and left half a dozen soldiers with us. Then he went away with his troop, and friends of the house gave the soldiers that stayed, and their horses, some meat. When the captain was gone, the soldiers that were left told us we might stay till night if we would. But we stayed but about 3 hours after, and had a glorious, powerful meeting, for the presence of the living God was manifest amongst us, and the seed, Christ, was set over all. Friends were built upon him, the foundation.